Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by your CFRC News Collective, Ara McCauley, Jesse Bell, and Jenny Hinch. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Ara McCauley, and here are your local news headlines. The City of Kingston's new Household Hazardous Waste (HHW) facility at 189 Lappin's Lane will not be operational for the 2026 season due to a delay in the delivery of a fabricated building that city staff says is critical to safe site operation. Originally set to open to the public on July 2nd, the city was waiting for the arrival of the depot's custom-built receiving building when a critical equipment failure at the manufacturer resulted in a significant delay to the delivery schedule. The city has not been provided with a revised timeline, leading them to cancel 2026 service outright. According to a statement issued by the city, the receiving building is a highly specialized structure that is custom manufactured to meet the city and project's specific operational, regulatory, and technical requirements. The HHW facility is unable to operate without the receiving building being fully installed and operational, as dictated by the Ministry of Environment, Conservation, and Parks. Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste, noted that while the site awaits delivery of the receiving building, all other project work will continue as planned. Site servicing and construction activities will proceed, including completion of the site works and construction of the remaining buildings for normal operation in 2027. The new HHW was originally intended to be relocated to the western edge of the existing Kingston Area Recycling Center site, reusing existing structures and equipment and relying on the existing environmental certification for an estimated cost of $375,000. In August 2025, City Council approved an additional $1.3 million to supplement the original budget following the sale of the KARC site, with proceeds from the sale covering the increased expense. Following the sale, the Household Hazardous Waste Depot was relocated to a city-owned site on the north side of Lappin's Lane. While the new design is expected to improve operations related to handling, management, and storage of waste, the relocation to undeveloped land has required the construction of brand new structures, site works and staff areas, a new environmental clearance, and access/driveway paving. To maintain service during the gap, the city has secured two drop-off events with a mobile household hazardous waste collection provider on the following dates: Saturday, July 18th at the KFR Training Center, 18 Terry Fox Drive, and Saturday, August 29th at the Public Works Sand and Salt Dome, 1307 Innovation Drive, using a familiar drive-through setup where staff fully manage the materials. Full range of household hazardous waste normally collected at the city facility will be accepted. The closure and small number of drop-off dates has led some residents to voice their frustration, with social media comments expressing dissatisfaction over the inconvenience, criticizing the decision to close the previous facility before the new one was in operation, warning of illegal dumping, and concern about long lineups to drop off materials when only two drop-off days have been scheduled. Data pulled from the Open Data Kingston website shows that residents disposed of nearly 180,000 kilograms of hazardous waste during the facility's operating hours last year, working out to an average of 22,496 kilograms of hazardous waste per month. The city is reminding residents that many local retailers accept materials such as antifreeze, electronics, paint, pesticide, oil, solvents, and batteries. A map listing locations where materials can be safely disposed of is available via the Resource Productivity and Recovery Authority at www.rpra.ca/where-to-recycle. In the meantime, they call on Kingstonians to hold on to hazardous waste until it can be dealt with safely, asking please don't dispose of household hazardous waste items in your garbage. City staff presented the results of their review of bylaws regulating property standards to council this month, following a directive from council's November 14th meeting. That motion, put forth by Councillor Hazan, asked staff to identify opportunities to improve public awareness, understanding, and potential refinements to enhance property standards requirements, while ensuring the city does not become unnecessarily involved in private disputes between neighbors. While staff found the existing bylaws to be effective overall, they did present three general areas for improvement. improvement, including public education and communication, clarification of enforcement thresholds, and administrative modernization to improve consistency and transparency. The original motion was in part driven by ongoing complaints counselors reported receiving from citizens about the impact of certain property conditions on neighboring properties. These complaints include concerns over exterior property maintenance, overgrown vegetation, fencing disputes, drainage issues, and what they describe as accumulation of materials and visual disorder concerns. The city maintains several bylaws intended to support safe, clean, and respectful neighborhoods, including property standards, yards, nuisance and community standards bylaws, and building code enforcement, which is under provincial authority. Further to this, the city offers a Good Neighbor Guide, which provides an overview of municipal services, expectations, and enforcement processes, including an outline of the bylaw enforcement policy. Under provincial legislation, municipalities may regulate standards for maintenance and occupancy, but must remain within prescribed authority. This means that matters such as property line encroachments, civil trespass, or purely aesthetic disagreements between neighbors typically fall outside municipal jurisdiction and into private civil law. This is a distinction that staff argue is critical to maintain in order to manage legal risk and use enforcement resources appropriately. While staff notes that the majority of the property-related complaints received by enforcement services do involve maintenance standards clearly defined in bylaws, they also indicate that many complaints involve neighbor disputes framed as bylaw complaints, where the complainant is not aware of the thresholds required for enforcement action. The regulations themselves can be complicated, with property standards enforcement occupying a gray area in between municipal regulation, provincial legislation, and private civil relationships. Staff identified several awareness gaps in their existing Good Neighbors Guide as well, such as a limited understanding of what qualifies as a property standard violation, the misconception that the city can intervene in all neighbor conflicts, and a general lack of clarity on timelines and the amount of proof needed to make a tangible claim. The report highlighted common complaints that are not within the city's scope of power, such as aesthetic disagreements, personal conflicts between neighbors, and interpersonal tenant-landlord conflicts, noting the importance of distinguishing between bylaw issues and those governed by the Residential Tenancies Act. One notable talking point at council came from the report's statement on vegetation maintenance provisions, including regulations related to long grass and weeds. The report states that the city cannot compel aesthetic conformity where no health or safety issue exists, meaning complaints must address objective concerns related to health, safety, pest control, fire risk, and the general maintenance of neighborhood environments. Municipalities often provide a clear threshold for vegetation height or the accumulation of weeds to ensure properties are maintained at a minimum standard, but these regulations are not intended to dictate aesthetic preferences, but rather to address objective conditions that may increase safety hazards, pest infestation, or fire concerns. Councillor Tozzo requested clarification on what constitutes an unkempt lawn.
One of the questions I've asked about is the vegetation maintenance and freedom of expression considerations. So I guess a question I have, because I've dealt with this a lot in my district lately, is when is a lawn unkempt? And when is it a freedom of expression? And what objective measures does the city use?
I can confirm that the city's enforcement practices are focused on objective health and safety concerns, particularly around fire risk. And the city enforces its bylaw in a way that's intended to minimally impair the property owner's right to expressive conduct and focuses purely on objective health and safety issues. If the concerns are purely aesthetic in nature and are subjective, the city doesn't enforce its bylaws in a way that would impair someone's right to freedom of expression through gardening. So our bylaw officers will investigate and they'll assess whether there are health and safety risks associated with that property. There may be other property standards concerns that arise as a result of the unkempt yard, such as rodent infestation, for example, and there are other avenues for enforcement to address those types of issues.
Further to this, staff referenced laws around expressive activity on private property, noting assertions from property owners that naturalized yards, pollinated gardens, or intentionally unmanaged vegetation represents a form of expression protected under Section 2B of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, an argument that has stood up in Ontario courts.
We do have the benefit of two Ontario Superior Court of Justice decisions on this topic now, where the courts have held that naturalized lawns have been recognized in certain circumstances as a protected form of expression. So there was a decision in Mississauga this year where the court declared that Mississauga's restrictions on grass height were unconstitutional because they infringed on the property owner's freedom of expression. They view gardening to be a form of expressive conduct that is protected under the charter.
Councillor Tozzo asked if the city could communicate this better with residents.
Could we inform the public a bit better that this is a charter-related issue? Because I've had some really interesting conversations with constituents that the property owner next door has a charter-protected right to leave their lawn unmaintained. I'm hoping staff can appreciate, as a councillor, this is a really challenging thing to explain to constituents.
It's very difficult to provide definitive information to residents on this issue. As you can imagine, every circumstance is going to be entirely fact-specific in terms of whether charter rights have been invoked and or infringed upon. We could certainly provide information to council on the 2026 decision, but we would not want to definitively state that we no longer have an ability to enforce our bylaws.
Councillor Shaves expressed his concern with the existing bylaw and proposed license and registration options for those who may wish to naturalize their lawns. Receiving clarification from Kyle Compo, Director Licensing Enforcement for the City of Kingston, and Commissioner Agnew.
I know when we first sort of changed this bylaw, it was to help allow individuals to have naturalized front yards. I also believe that a number of people don't know we've changed this bylaw to allow this, so either they're just not maintaining it unintentionally, or they're using this as a loophole. Maybe how we can sort of close this down and define this and allow people to naturalize and use their charter rights is maybe doing something similar to what the fire department does with their fire pit permits, that they could register through the licensing or bylaw, so then they could have a permit. And if the bylaw received a complaint, they could just look it up and going, no, it's already been approved, it's fine. And if anyone doesn't have their permit, then they'd be asked to cut the grass or get a permit.
There's a lot to unpack with that one. We came to administrative policies last year when we amended the yards bylaw. That was consultation with the Naturalized Lawn Associations. We did lots of public engagement for that, and we did outreach after the fact. We did public engagement. In terms of the registry, I do think that is something that we can look at. I would be just conscious of the fact that the way the bylaw is written right now is around health and safety, and we have the prohibited plants list. In terms of the registry itself, I think it would be somewhat difficult because registry comes back to the staff have done review, that they've had an intake, they're reviewing the types of plants that are involved, and our officers aren't trained in terms of that. But it is something that we can explore. I'm not saying it can't be.
We haven't been able to assess this from a staff resourcing or like a feasibility perspective, so I'd be hesitant to suggest that we go with a program like that at this point. I think it's something we can explore at council's direction, but we do need time to properly assess whether we could do it effectively, what the resource implications would be given all of the other priorities we have right now for the enforcement team. But we wouldn't be able to be back with any information on that for, you know, some months, I would say, based on the rest of the priorities we're trying to complete right now.
The report recognized that complaints relating to lawn grass and vegetation frequently camouflage personal disputes and generally fall outside the city's regulatory authority. In addition to better education of residents, the report recommended communication improvements between complainants and bylaw officers to ensure that enforcement actions are perceived as fair, transparent, and focused on objective standards. Councillor Osanek asked staff for a timeline for implementation of these recommendations.
We've already started to implement some of these processes, especially with the communication to our property standards officers on how they're communicating back to the public on certain complaints or to update feedback. We have implemented a callback cards so that when we're going to door to door, we're really trying to focus on providing that relationship with how you contact a bylaw officer, making that more apparent, how to specifically get a hold of that officer. So we're working on the city website to provide more clear information.
So is some of that enhanced communication with the person who made the complaint, like to educate them about what the city can do and can't do?
Yes, so we hear that quite often as well, that this case is still under review. We can't provide any additional feedback. We understand the frustration that that causes. There is some legal components to that that we can't disclose where things are in terms of the case, but we're also understanding of where the community's frustrations is for that. So we're working on providing, again, more information on what we can provide, what we can't provide, and trying to pick up the phone, call the complainant, and have that personal touch as well to have those conversations.
Moving forward, staff hopes that enhanced public education initiatives, including updates to the city's website, the Good Neighbor Guide, and targeted communication materials, will address common areas of confusion and improve overall understanding of property standards requirements. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell with your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. The NHL and NBA crowned new champions over the weekend. Game 5 of the NBA Finals was held on Saturday night in San Antonio. A low-scoring, defensive slugfest of a game was New York's star point guard Jalen Brunson, who turned in the performance of a lifetime, scoring 45 of his team's 94 points to pick up the title-clinching win. The victory snaps a 53-year title drought for the Knicks, caps off one of the most dominant playoff runs in NBA history. After dropping two straight in the first round against the Atlanta Hawks, New York reeled off 12 straight playoff victories to finish their dream season with a 16-3 postseason record. Game 6 of the NHL's Stanley Cup Finals was played last night in Las Vegas between the Golden Knights and the Carolina Hurricanes. The first three games of the series were closely contested affairs, two of which required overtime periods. The final three games saw the heavy favorite Hurricanes pull away thanks to a relentless attack and a strong defensive performance. Carolina would blank Vegas 3-0 on the road to bring home their second Stanley Cup in franchise history and their first in 20 years. Vegas attracted a great deal of controversy and ire online by signing goaltender Carter Hart, one of the key players in the Hockey Canada sexual misconduct scandal. Game 6 marked the only game in the series that Hart did not surrender four or more goals, finishing the game with 20 saves on 23 attempts in a 3-0 loss. Hart's 22 goals allowed in six games is one of the worst Stanley Cup Finals goaltending performances of the modern era. Coming up next, I've got your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Kicking things off with Monday, June 15th, 18 is your high. It's a beautiful day here in the city of Kingston. 25% chance of precipitation in the forecast, dropping down to 13 overnight. Tuesday, June 16th, slightly warmer. 19 is your high, but it's going to be quite humid, feeling closer to 22 degrees with an 85% chance of rain. Wednesday, June 17th, 19 is your high once more, feeling closer to 21 with a 70% chance of rain, dropping down to 16 overnight. Thursday, June 18th, it's going to be a stormy day here in the city of Kingston. Very windy, very cloudy, with the risk of a thunderstorm and a 95% chance of rain. Friday, June 19th, 19 is your high, feeling closer to 21, dropping down quite a bit to 12 overnight. Saturday, June 20th, 19 is your high once more with a 35% chance of showers in the afternoon, dropping down to 13 overnight. Sunday, June 21st, another 19 degree day, this one quite a bit sunnier and warmer, actually feeling closer to 25 out in the bright sunshine, dropping down to 13 overnight. And then Monday, June 22nd, 21 is your high, feeling closer to 24, a very high UV index of 9, 40% chance of rain in the afternoon, dropping down to 13 overnight. That's a wrap for your Environment Canada weather report. Coming up next, I'll have your City of Kingston traffic report. On Bath Road between Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Portsmouth Avenue, expect delays as crews continue installing intersection pedestrian signals. Over on King Street from Country Club Drive to Front Road, expect delays as Utilities Kingston work has reduced traffic to one lane each direction. Watch for lane shifts, reduced speeds, and shared lane signage. Cranbrook Street from Days Road to Lakeview Avenue will be closed from 8:40 to 9:20 a.m. in the morning and 3:20 to 3:50 p.m. in the afternoon as part of the School Streets program, restricting access during school drop-off and pickup times. Wright Crescent remains closed between Palace Road and Kingsland Crescent for roadway repairs and safety improvements. Construction continues on Princess Street from Frontenac to Division as part of a major reconstruction project. Long-term closures remain in place on Aberdeen Street between Johnson and William and Barry and Queen. And Sydenham Street is closed to through traffic between Princess and Queen for the Sydenham Street Community Space. On-street parking on Sydenham Street does, however, remain available. Over now to Genevieve Hinch for CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Genevieve Hinch, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community festivals, workshops, theater, pride events, or just something fun to do around the city, there is plenty of things happening this week in Kingston, so let's get into it. Starting off Monday, the Central Branch Library is hosting Craft and Create from 6 to 7:30 p.m. For music lovers, Schmaltz and Pepper bring their lively blend of Klezmer jazz and folk influences to the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Jazz fans can also catch Michael K. Myers and Rick Flanagan at the RCHA Club during Jazz Mondays, while the Mourning Doves perform at Musiki Cafe later that evening. Tuesday offers a mix of community events and live entertainment. The Italo-Canadian Club hosts its popular all-you-can-eat pasta night from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., while gardeners can head to Calvin Park Ranch from the ground up, a garden workshop series. Live music includes Eric Urin and Megan Ballon at the Cove Inn and Musiki's weekly open mic night. Literary and music fans can also catch Quirks of Human Nature featuring Meg Freer and Deborah Schrumans at the Timeout Bar. On Wednesday, Queen's University hosts Indigenous Health Day from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., while the Tech Gallery continues its In Memory of Rose expedition. If you're looking for something social, Wonderland hosts a board game night beginning at 6 p.m. Later that evening, Something in the Water Brewing Company presents the Beach episode, a drag and burlesque showcase running from 8 to 11 p.m., Live music highlights include Vince DeBeale at the Bank Gastro Bar and music from Big Pink featuring the Bourbon Tabernacle Choir at Hotel Wolf Island. Thursday starts bright and early with a summer solstice forest therapy walk at Little Cataraqui Creek Conservation Area. The Kingston Public Market returns to Springer Market Square throughout the day, while the Kingston LGBTQ+ Business Mixer takes place in the evening. Film lovers can catch a free outdoor screening of But I'm a Cheerleader in Springer Market Square at 8:15 p.m. Live music includes Morgan Davis at the Cove Inn, Alex Mundy and Friday's Child at the Broom Factory, and a jam night at the RCHA Club. Friday is packed with music, theater, and community events. Skeleton Park Arts Festival officially gets underway with Walks of Life, an open mic night at Next Church. Domino Theater continues performances of Very Heaven, while music fans can catch Fleetwood Nicks and Practically Petty at the Sphere, Parabolus at the Broom Factory, and Philip John Lewin, Sandro Perry, and Sing Leith at Hotel Wolf Island. Gerald McGrath also takes the stage at the Turnanog later in the evening. Heading into Saturday, one of Kingston's biggest weekends of the summer begins. Skeleton Park Arts Festival takes over McBurney Park with live music, art, food, and family activities throughout the day. Downtown Kingston hosts the Princess Street Promenade, turning the city's main street into a pedestrian-friendly celebration of local businesses, performers, and vendors. The Montreal Street Vintage Market also returns, while Daft Brewing hosts the Mike McPherson Memorial Music Fundraiser. In the evening, Trans Family Queer Prom takes place at the Ambassador Events Center. Music highlights include Y2D Wayne at MacKinnon Brothers Brewing Company, Squid Pistol at Spearhead Brewing, and Al Lerman at the RCHA Club. Wrapping things up, Sunday, National Indigenous Peoples Day celebrations take place at Confederation Park from 1 to 6 p.m. Skeleton Park's Arts Festival continues throughout the day with performances across multiple stages. Live music include Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn Waterside Patio, Gizmo, Naked by Nine, and Lumpfish at the Broom Factory, and Sounds on Sydenham closing out the festival at McBurney Park. The Memorial Center Farmers Market also returns from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. for anyone looking to spend a relaxing Sunday supporting local vendors. That's your weekly events and concerts calendar for June 15th through the 21st. For more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. So be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny, and thanks for listening, and have a great week, Kingston!
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.